Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We're your hosts for this weekend's edition. Also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com and podcast, Corlin Economics Report. Thank you everybody for sending in the emails, letting us know which podcast distributors you use and which ones you have been having trouble getting our podcast. We went through a bit of a change in servers and distribution network, and we're still trying to make sure that our podcast is being uploaded every day to all the different podcasting apps. So please keep emailing us, letting us know, hopefully, that you are receiving it, or if you're not, let us know what service you are using. That being said, let's get into these markets as we are kicking off the show with Richard Postma, a.k.a. Doc. Now, Doc, we always chat either at the very tail end or very beginning of the month. We are recording this on Wednesday, and really it's about recapping last month and looking ahead to how you see these markets playing out. We will get into the precious metals and a few other sectors, but first and foremost, U.S. equity markets. July was a pretty good month for U.S. markets. They started to bounce really at the beginning or second week of the month. And no matter what market you look at, whether it's the S&P, Dow, NASDAQ, Russell, they're all up 12 to 15, 16%. So it has been a nice rebound. But again, this rebound does very much look like nothing more than a bear market rally or dead cat bounce. Doc, what's your takeaway from that July action and how it translates into what could come here in August?
Well, I think August is going to be a month where it's going to be okay for the conventional markets. And I think that we could move higher, but I don't see a lot of volatility in the conventional markets this month. I think the market this month could close out at a higher level than July. And we could have a few weeks here of getting people's hopes up. The negative on that is, frankly, is I'm sure it's one of the variables that the Fed watches is the conventional markets, and they must be licking their chops because that's going to allow them to continue to be aggressive in their interest rate hikes. And that's the worst thing possible, frankly, for us to see as far as the precious metals and commodities are concerned. So they're going to love the fact that the conventional markets are so sanguine, and it's just going to allow them to be even more aggressive going forward as long as these conventional markets levitate here. But I don't think that's going to last. And come September and October, I think the conventional markets get some real headwinds again.
Yeah, Doc, it's a great point that the stronger markets over the last couple of weeks, and if that extends into August, will give the Fed some cover to continue hiking as planned and as they've messaged. But if you think that things could roll over in September, October, I just got to ask, I know you put on some shorts in the past on the general markets. Would there be a technical level or a place you'd be looking to short the general equities again, say in a month or so?
Boy, that's a real tough one, Chad, because I would probably look at about 34,000 as the first chance to short. That's the first chance I would look at shorting this market. And it's going to take us a little while to get there, but I think we might reach that again as 34,000. Then I'd have to seriously look at other technical indicators to see if I want to take a position again. So that's what I'm watching right now is around 34,000. I think we have some really good odds to get up to that over the next few weeks.
So, Doc, what I find so interesting about a lot of these U.S. equity market charts is that the bottom, or at least the short-term bottom, was really put in the middle of June. So the market's looking ahead to, who knows, maybe a slowdown in Fed policy, or quite frankly, they're just oversold to the fact that they rebounded. But over this month and a half now, you look at something like the NASDAQ on a daily chart, the NASDAQ is pretty much back to overbought territory. If you look at the RSI, if you look at the slow stochastics, does that change your outlook at all, saying that maybe the worst is over in this large, or what has been kind of a grinding bear market through this whole year?
boy, I hope the worst isn't over, because that's not going to portend well for our future. Because when you look at the long-term charts, the markets have not broken down through their 50-month moving averages for years, except in 2020, when it closed briefly below it, when we had that plunge in the early part of 2020, which, when it happens that fast, it's often not a signal of a bear market. So if we're truly in a bear market, we're going to have to take those 50-month simple moving averages and exponential moving averages out to really see a bear market for this. Because if it bounces off of there like we did in June and we continue to move higher, this market is going to be so overbought that when the crash comes later, it's going to be stupendous, actually. So we've had just unrequiting moves higher in these markets because of the easy money policies. And we can't afford that anymore, because it's just going to put us at more risk down the road.
It's a great point, Doc. And I don't think a lot of people that are at trading desks that have only been trading maybe 10 or 15 years even understand what a real bear market looks like. But it's not over in 6 months typically, or 8 months. It's usually 12 to 18 months. And all the economic indicators are that the economy is slowing, whether it's the housing, the labor markets, the GDP numbers. It's not a real rosy picture out there, and that will be reflected in corporate earnings reports. When you're looking at the general markets, Doc, do you ever get into individual names, or do you mostly trade ETFs? What are you looking at when you invest in the general markets?
I look at different sectors, and especially growth stories. Right now, I'm looking at a couple of biotech companies that I've started to purchase at really low levels that were up tremendously compared to where they are. And they've got good products. And I think with time, if they continue to grow those companies, and I think they have a chance of really seeing a big move down the road. And biotech has gotten hurt so bad. So I'm looking at that. And then I'm looking at a semiconductor company that may have a product that replaces silicon as far as batteries are concerned, because it's much more efficient, it's not as heavy. And so I'm looking at things like that with that are a small cap that have a potential to really do well in the future. So I'm starting to purchase some in that area. So I'll look at any sector where there's a potential high growth story, and I'll start to take positions, because some of those stocks have gotten so battered already.
All right, Doc, let's move over to the precious metals. I know a lot of our listeners want to hear your thoughts on the precious metals. Let's start with gold. Gold got off to a pretty bad start to the month in July, selling off pretty consistently down to a low of about $1,678. That was about 3 weeks through. And then it rebounded nicely in the last couple of weeks to close just under $1,800. Again, though, the chart still isn't looking all that great when you consider it's just continuously lower lows and lower highs that we keep on seeing here. Are you encouraged at all by that rebound in July from that 1678 level?
Yeah, somewhat. What I'm encouraged by is the fact that, you know, you go back to 2012 to 2013 in that gold market in 2011, when we saw a move down in that peak, we moved down, and I have to check my numbers, but if I remember correctly, we moved down about 46% before we bottomed from the top. And here we are sitting more months out than when it did that almost back then. And we're about 20% down or less. And I've talked consistently about how this, there is more underlying strength to this gold market than back then. And that's very encouraging. Now, the other thing I have been harping on for months is that when everybody was so bullish and it went up and challenged its highs before, I've been harping that it is so rare. And why I harp on these things is for people to give an indication on what might happen here, the odds of it. It's so rare to be in a long-term downtrend like this without pricing challenging the lower Bollinger band on the monthly chart. And guess what? We challenged that finally last month. And it's encouraging that we bounced off of that. Plus, we bounced off of one of the 50-month moving averages, which I had mentioned also it would be rare that we then challenge those. So now we're up here this month, and that's encouraging. And I think this month for gold is going to be okay. We might even close with a higher monthly close than last month. But once again, I don't think we're going to get a chance of moving right back down to challenge that lower Bollinger band this month. We may do it in September, but so far we're looking pretty good this month. And those bands, Bollinger bands, are still moving sideways. The lower one's starting to move down a little bit, which I don't like to see. But compared to what happened in 2011, 12, and 13, this is a totally different picture than we saw back then. Plus, I had mentioned that the strength indicators were moving laterally to down at such a slow rate, and that usually gives you an indication that you have underlying strength to a market.
Doc, some really cogent points there. I distinctly remember 2010, 2011, there was true euphoria in the sector. There was people out on streets with signs saying they'd buy gold. There were TV commercials. There were radio commercials everywhere. We were nothing like that when gold got above its all-time high just in 2020. And this year in March, when gold got back above 2000, there was no euphoria in the sector. It was mostly just precious metals traders trading amongst themselves. So 100%, it's a different setup than the downturn we saw in 2013, which was that really cascade down. We haven't seen that this time. So to your point, there's some underlying strength in the gold market, but it sounds like you think things are going to waffle along here, maybe a little bit up in August, a little bit down in September, October. What will you be looking for as a signal that it's more of an all clear, that maybe the uptrend is really going to start in earnest with gold?
I will get feeling a lot better when you look at the MACD on the monthly chart, and I said this months ago, when we get close to neutral on that, because I don't think the MACD is going to go as deep into negative territory like we did back in 2011, 12, and 13. And that's what I'm watching very closely. And we're going to continue to move down with the 12-month leading the 26-month. We've reestablished that move down, and that could last into the first part of next year, frankly. And so that's what I'm watching very carefully. And there's a couple other things that I'm interested in that I may mention later, because I may then, if those particular technicals are reached, I may raise the alert to people that I feel that we're pretty close to a bottom.
Doc, let's talk gold stocks then. GDX, GDXJ, no denying that they have been in a downtrend really since August of 2020. So we're talking 2 years now. The stocks went through a pretty big sell-off in June, rebounded a little bit in July, but are still well below any recent highs. And look, it's a pretty pronounced downtrend that we are seeing here. GDXJ, for example, is off a little over 50% from those highs in August. Any chance that these gold stocks finally do get some more notice from investors rather than simply just trading with markets? Because I thought scary markets, bear markets, recession fears, all that should be pushing investors into gold stocks. Doesn't seem to be, because they moved exactly with the markets during this rebound.
Yeah, and I had mentioned that a long time too, that I thought it would, once the general market got hurt bad, would kind of move down with the market. Because I think what these stocks are signaling and what gold is signaling is that we're moving into a disinflationary environment. Now, that doesn't mean deflation. That means disinflationary. And I think we're going to start to see some slowdown in inflation as far as the percentage gained in comparison over last year. One of the reasons why, frankly, I think the oil chart is starting to break, which I had mentioned a while back. And it won't break enough to help Biden in November by that time, I don't think. But it's in a slow motion and in a southern manner right now. And so I think there will be some positive news on inflation in another 2 or 3 months. I think we're going to see some slowing of it. And gold may be sensing that right now. Now, that doesn't mean that the Fed's going to be out of the woods at all, because they think, everybody thought they meant that we were at neutral at 2.5, which we aren't, by the way. Suddenly, all the other ones came out afterwards when a couple of days later we had mentioned this, that suddenly Kashkari got all hawkish after he'd been dovish. And that's what they do. They play these word games back and forth just to keep people unsettled that are trading these markets. They've been doing that for years. But anyway, so I think we will continue to see pressure, particularly on GDX, because all you have to do is look at Newmont right now, and that's a pretty ugly looking chart, and it's right at its 400 week exponential moving average, and it's going to probably close below that this week, and that does not portend well for Newmont. So the big caps are starting to get hit here finally, and that's going to continue in the near weeks going forward.
Well, Doc, we talked about the big caps possibly being more at risk because they hadn't pulled back as much as the juniors. But before we started recording, we were just talking about just how beat down these juniors are in valuation. Some are trading at cash in the bank. Some have got millions of ounces of gold in the ground, or hundreds of millions of ounces of silver in the ground, and they're trading like they've got nothing in the ground. Do you think that there's actually more advantage now to some of the junior stocks over the more established producers just based on where the valuations are?
Oh, yes, no questions added. And the nice thing about that is, for those of us that have waited, you can start to purchase these companies at pennies. And even though Newmont, and I mentioned that, let's say moves down another $5, some of these might move down 2 cents. So it's not going to hurt you anymore, unless some of them would go bankrupt. But the ones with, gold in the ground, I don't think that would happen, because somebody will come in, and actually you'll see mergers and acquisitions going forward for companies that at least have some money to do that. But yeah, they're getting so cheap that they're not going to get hurt as much as some of the big caps on a percentage basis here anymore. So good to do your due diligence and start purchasing some of these.
It doesn't sound like an all clear though, is it, Doc? Like, this isn't something that you're expecting is going to pay off in the near term. This, unfortunately, and as much as I hate saying it, is still a longer term play.
Absolutely. And I've also said constantly over the last number of weeks and months that when we get to a bottom here, you're going to have to see some consolidation for a while. And then what you're going to, and the chance of a big V-shaped recovery is I don't think going to be there like it was back in 2020. I think what you're going to see is a slow build over time on these stocks. And then eventually we're going to get the run we want.
Well, Doc, some of the, like you, that follows technicians as closely as you do, and I would probably categorize you as more of a value investor trying to buy low and hold for long periods of time. Isn't it important for people to also, when they're listening to these kind of shows, think about their investing time horizon? Because there's been plenty of opportunities where a nimble trader could get in and make 30%, 50%, 100%, even multiple percentages, even over the last 2 years since August of 2020, when we've been correcting. There's been plenty of tradable rallies. But so some people get excited about the short-term tradable rallies, but most people claim they're buying for the long term, and then they worry about every little blip along the way instead of keeping their eye on the longer-term prize. How do you manage that cognitive dissonance as a value investor?
With difficulty. these things get so cheap that I say to myself, holy cow, can they get any cheaper? And a lot of them do. And you've just got to stay objective with your charting. And you're right about some of these swings. I've even done some of it, Shad, where I made money on, where I'll buy a position knowing that we're pretty close to the end of a move down, and then get a move up of 40% on some of these cheap stocks. But it takes a real discipline and a belief in what you're seeing, and to stay true to the charts. And I'm old enough to have been through this a few times. So it's easier probably for me than some of the younger guys that, you know, just are chomping at the bit. But that's when you get whipsawed. That's when, and I am a value investor mostly. I buy for the long term, and I like to buy companies really cheap because, you know, the returns are amazing if you hang on.
So, Doc, let's also talk silver then, because I want to get your thoughts on silver. Drop below $20 an ounce, down into the 18 region, then quickly recovered back up to just over $20 an ounce. As we're recording this, it has just slipped slightly below $20 an ounce, but let's just round it off to say silver's at $20 an ounce. Any encouragement on silver leading the way higher or getting back up into the mid-20s?
Not for a while. I think silver's on its way to move back down to $19, and let's see what happens then. But no, but still, for those that believe in the cup and handle, it's still there. In fact, this is a nicer farming handle that we're now seeing than we were seeing before. So that's still in play, by the way. I wouldn't throw that out just yet, because we could still move lower this year and then into early part of next year, bottom, and then start moving up with silver. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened at all.
Well, Doc, that'll be important to follow along with, because really a lot of the mining stocks seem to track the movements of silver, that speculative money, more so than they do gold anyways. But what about the rest of the base metals? Because silver kind of has that unique dual purpose. It's part precious metal, part industrial metal. But what about things like Dr. Copper? What about nickel and zinc? Yeah, how are you viewing the rest of the metals in the commodity space when we have inflation, but we have a recession worry, we've got Fed rate hikes? It's a real garbled mix. What's your outlook?
Yeah, you know, in copper, with us moving into recession, copper is at great risk. And copper right now on the weekly is playing with a 200-week moving average. And it took it out for 1 week. And if we move back down below that and to a new low, copper's going even lower. We could head down to 250. So I'd be careful with copper right here. With a recession looming for the next few weeks to months, I don't know how copper can continue to survive at these levels. So I'd be very careful with copper right here and with the monthly chart I'm looking at. I don't see any rebound significantly in copper for a while.
Doc, quick comment on the U.S. dollar. How much has the U.S. dollar contributed to this downturn in the metals? Where do you see the dollar going from here? And again, any carryover effect to the markets or metals?
The dollar has really hurt the commodity sector, the precious metals and the commodity sector. And with the interest rate hikes coming, and the fact that the euro dollar, even though they're starting to increase rates there a little bit, I don't think it's going to hurt the dollar, because Europe just stinks as far as its problems. Europe has, and Germany particularly, have just horrendous problems with the U.S. sanctions imposed on Russia as far as natural gas and oil, and Germany particularly. And so they're going to be in more dire economic straits than we are. So I think that's going to be still positive for the dollar for a while. I don't see the dollar in trouble until the fourth quarter of this year. I think that's when the dollar most likely will peak. I think it continues to move grudgingly higher, and then I think we get to the point where it starts to peak the fourth quarter of this year.
Well, Doc, just in light of that and what some of the other economies are facing, or what the other central banks are doing, where they're starting to tighten, we're seeing the ECB tighten, we're seeing Canada tighten, we're seeing Bank of London tighten for the UK. Is there any chance that some of these other currencies gain a little bit on the dollar, or does that change your outlook on bonds and interest rates? Any thoughts on how that all kind of ties together, what we're seeing globally versus the U.S.?
I don't see where a lot of other currencies do that great against the dollar, because really everybody is sucking wind here, and Japan isn't much better off. And as we know, the euro on a trade-weighted basis makes up about 58% of the dollar index. So I don't see how that will play much of a role at all. And when you look at the bond market, the bond market, I don't think is going to recover anytime soon. I think we're going to get a little move up here yet, and we are. So there's going to be a little reprieve here for the bond market for a little while, but I don't see the bond market really moving significantly higher here. I think rates will continue to slowly increase here, and we've taken out the 50-month moving averages on the bond market, which was significant. We hadn't done that in years, And so we're definitely establishing a new trend in the bond market, I believe. And we're not going to see those kind of highs again probably in our lifetime.
All right, Doc, we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks for taking our questions on a number of different markets. And hey, we might be in for an okay month, but it does sound like still your outlook is for this bear market to continue, and this bear market that has just taken the stairs down pretty consistently with the odd little bounce here and there. It seems like we're going through another bounce right now. But again, everything just seems to be moving in tandem with each other. Maybe this risk-on environment, it's encouraging to see, but we're all still just waiting for another Fed meeting, which now is still 7 weeks away. Doc, thank you as always for your time. It's great chatting with you. Great having you on the show. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend. We'll chat again at the tail end of the month.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are now chatting with Adrian Day, president of Adrian Day Asset Management. Now, Adrian, just as we started off with pretty much every segment this weekend, and it felt like every segment this week, I do want to ask you about the general bounce that we have seen in markets. It hasn't just been isolated to one market. It's been pretty much across the board where a bit more risk tolerance has come into investors' minds. It has everybody wondering, is there truly a bottom in place for markets? Are we going to continue to see more money put to work? Or, quite frankly, is this just going to be another bear market rally or dead cat bounce within what already has been a 7 month long plus pullback all this year? We've already seen a couple bounces this year, two in particular that have taken the markets up about 10 to 11%. This rally has taken markets up broadly around 12%, so right in that same range as the earlier bounces. Adrian, give us your takeaway. Is a bottom truly in place for the markets, or again, is this just another bear market rally or dead cat bounce?
Yeah, well, of course, and thank you for having me. Good morning. Well, we never know for sure, of course, but you know, my sense would be that this, we are in a bear market, and if that's the case, this is simply a bear market rally. As you mentioned, bear market rallies are frequent. Any time we've had a bear market in the past, there have been many rallies. And I think, you know, just back to the dot-com bust, you know, the rally lasted, what, 2.5 years, but during that time, there were five rallies. Bear market rally being defined as more than 10% bounce. So, you know, rallies in a bear market are usual and are frequent. Seeing the market bounce, the S&P I'm looking at now, seeing the S&P bounce from, you know, June, early June, mid-June, I guess, about 12% or more than 12% now, and it's coming up to what I would call a soft ceiling. It's obviously not a hard ceiling, but it's where the rally petered out in May. It's the bottom that we saw in March a few times before it was finally broken. So, you know, it's a reasonable level to think, but we're very close. We could be close to the end of our rally. You know, 4,200 on the S&P is what I would target. And one of the reasons that I think we're still in a bear market is because the Fed has not finished tightening. We've talked about just how hawkish they are or are not. in the past, and to remind listeners, I don't think they're being very hawkish at all. But nonetheless, they have not ended that process yet. And yet the market valuations are still very high. You know, we're selling at over 20 times earnings multiple on the S&P right now. That does not sound like a bear market bottom to me, not at all.
Well, Adrian, it seems like things were just so oversold that, you know, most of these bear market rallies start with a short covering rally first where the shorts cover. And then you see a little life, like you say, maybe 10%. And it did accelerate after the FOMC meeting and the Powell press conference, when he seemed to indicate that next year they'd be wrapping up and maybe even indicated some people thought that they may go back to rate cuts next year. There was also that bad GDP number, second quarter of U.S. growth negative, and that just kind of solidified people's belief that while the Fed is still hiking and still has maybe a few more hikes to go, that they're kind of getting things more normalized and they're not going to be as aggressive. Do you think that's enough that would even be able to get markets going anyways? Or what fundamentally has to change in your view to see the markets, the general markets or the commodities rally and for it to stick?
Well, absolutely. If the Fed were to pause, they don't even have to pivot, but just pause or signal an end to the rate hikes, I think that would be sufficient to get the market going. And as you say, Powell at his press conference, it wasn't in the official statement, but you normally get the more interesting stuff in the press conference anyway. He did, as you say, give some pretty dovish comments, which frankly was a bit surprising. And also the fact that the Fed, that he said the Fed will no longer give, you know, longer term guidance, but they'll play it meeting to meeting, depending on what data comes in. That sounds very much to me like they're sort of getting ready to change direction. And so the market definitely reacted to that. But you probably noticed in the last week, really, since that press conference, we've had 5, 6, maybe even 7 current Federal Reserve officials, as well as Bill Dudley, the former New York Fed chief, come out saying, we haven't finished yet. Bullard said it today. You know, we haven't finished yet. We're going to bring inflation down to 2%. We're determined to do it, blah, blah, blah. So I think that's a little bit of walking back or clarifying, if you want, what the message of Powell left. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not a big Fed supporter, needless to say, but I'm not in the camp. I've not been in the camp all year that thinks the Fed's going to pivot at the first, you know, at the first sign of trouble. But I suspect that by the end of this year or early next year, we'll be seeing a pause from the Fed. I mean, the economy is just, despite what they say about not being in a recession, both the Fed and the White House, the economy is slowing pretty dramatically. And, you know, Powell and the other Fed members, I'm not talking about Biden here, but just Powell and the other Fed members, I mean, they're not stupid. They can see that the economy's slowing. And so when they say, oh, well, you know, we're not technically in a recession because there's a lot of other things that go into a recession. You can't have a recession when unemployment rate is so low. And for Powell to say that the labor market is strong right now is really quite preposterous. But again, he's not stupid. He has to know it. So the unemployment rate is low, but the participation rate has declined. The number of job openings has declined dramatically. The number of layoffs, new claims for unemployment, has gone up significantly more than expected. So all of these are indications that the employment picture is changing. And then you have companies from Amazon, Google, Facebook, Starbucks, all talking about hiring pauses or even layoffs. And they all use different words. You know, the high tech companies don't say we're going to lay people off. They have, I think Google has something called a simplicity program, which is a euphemism for, you know, cutting people, and everybody knows it. anyway, my point is that the employment picture is changing dramatically. And if all you look at is the unemployment number, you are looking at the past, you're looking at what's happened. And that, frankly, is one of the Fed's big problems. When you're data dependent, you're always looking at the past. You're looking at what's happened. But apart from that, you know, you only have to look at history. And, you know, people say you can't have a recession when unemployment is so low. I mean, the White House has said that, Powell said it at the press conference, and many other Fed people have said it. They've said with unemployment so low, there's no way this is a recession. Well, you can go all the way back to 1947, and every single recession, unemployment was very low at the beginning of a recession. And of course, it shot up during the recession. So, I mean, it's just, you know, and Powell has got to know that. He's not stupid. But I don't know whether they think they can continue to fool the public. I'm sorry, I'm going on to another Fed rant. So let's get back to markets.
Back to the markets then here, Adrian. Look, no one's denying that I think the economies, if not already in a recession, are heading down that route, and the job market, even the Fed is starting to say that they are paying attention to it. Job market has been weakening a little bit. But again, back to these markets, it's been a broad-based rebound. Just like it's been a broad-based sell-off this year, the markets that have arguably outperformed have been the tech sector, which took it the hardest on the downside. The commodities, those have also bounced. But again, just hand in hand with the markets, I personally haven't noticed too many sectors or any individual sectors that are truly outperforming during this rebound, meaning that investors are showing a bit more aggressive nature in those sectors. Have you noticed any sectors that have outperformed to the upside that have looked stronger to you during this rebound?
To be honest, no, I haven't. I haven't. I mean, what I'm looking at very much right now, the only broad sectors I can see that I think are worth buying now for a sort of 1 or 2 year horizon would be the gold and silver stocks and some of the resources. You know, I like the copper stocks.
Now, why do you say that, Adrian? Get into why you think those will outperform to the upside when, quite frankly, they've just followed the market.
Okay, so typically in a market decline, gold stocks go down with the market, and frequently they will go down ahead of the broad market and they will go down further than the broad market. And we certainly saw that in the second quarter, that the XAU, the gold and silver stocks, fell more than the S&P. But typically, you know, again, looking at 2020, 2008, 1987, typically after a sharp decline in the market, the gold and silver stocks rebound further than the broad market. Now, it certainly hasn't happened yet, and that's largely, I think, because of the dollar. You know, the dollar's been a headwind. Gold is down. Gold itself is down about 6% this year. The dollar's up about, well, it was up. It was up about 14%, but it's less now. So given the headwind of the dollar, you know, gold has held up well. But I think the gold stocks will turn when gold turns meaningfully. And again, that was certainly the case in you know, 2009 and the other dates that I mentioned earlier. Gold moved up and then the gold stocks rebounded. So, you know, the big question to me is the dollar, I mean, there's two big questions. One is when the Fed pauses or even pivots, that would be very positive for gold as well as the stock market. The other factor that would see gold move, obviously, is the dollar. And we know the dollar's been very strong recently. By recently, I mean the last several months, based primarily, you know, on the rate differential, with the U.S. rates being higher than Europe, Japan, and other alternatives, and the differential getting even wider until recently. But, you know, in the last few weeks, we've seen The ECB raised rates. The Bank of England is expected to raise rates again today. Australia is going to raise rates again today. So that rate of change is beginning to change. The differential is still in favor of the dollar, but the rate of change is beginning to change. And so I think we've probably seen the high for the dollar for at least the time being. That will certainly help gold, no question, because that's been what's really helped gold. And it's significant that the rally on, you know, Pelosi's visit to Taiwan, the dollar rally, has been fairly muted. And, you know, China making, you know, doing war games and making threats, you would have thought would be seen as a reasonably significant geopolitical risk. And yet the dollar didn't really rally much. So certainly not as much as when Russia invaded Ukraine. So I suspect that the dollar rally that we've seen, the long-term dollar rally, is running out of steam here. And that'll be very positive for gold. But the gold stocks really aren't going to turn up significantly or meaningfully until gold turns up, frankly.
Well, Adrian, when gold does turn up and it starts dragging the whole sector with it, including silver, a lot of times we'll see the largest miners move first because the capital flows will go into the big boys, you know, the larger producers, the royalty companies that are kind of safer names, and then it'll start working its way down the food chain into the development stories and then eventually down into the explorers. When you're getting positioned and trying to, I guess, take advantage of the low pricing, would you be moving into those larger cap names first and then gradually work down the food chain? Or are you looking at it that some of these juniors are so completely beaten up and taken out to the woodshed that they actually look pretty safe to get into based on where they're trading in valuations right now?
Yeah, I am putting most of the money into the larger cap stocks right now for the reasons you mentioned. They are typically they're the first to move. They're the more certain to move. That's another important factor. You know, if you buy just to name five names, if you buy, you know, Agnico, Barrick, Franco, Osisko, and Royal Gold, you can be very, very certain. But if gold goes to 2,500, your stocks, or 2,000, your stocks are going to move. If you buy, you know, Consolidated Moose Pasture, it may or may not go up. So big cap stocks are more certain to move, and they're also, for the reasons you said, the flows, the first to move. But having said that, as you say, some of the juniors are so very, very undervalued that we're buying some of those as well. But I'm still focusing on the big cap names. And I think there'll be time to buy the big cap names, and if we get rallies, to start trimming some of those, and there'll still be time to move into the juniors.
So, Adrian, how aggressive have you been then with your positioning? What have you been positioning in? Can you give us some insights into how you're playing, again, right now, this potential bear market bounce for markets across the board?
Across the board, outside of gold and silver? I mean, we're pretty loaded up on gold and silver stocks. We have a full allocation there.
Have you been fully allocated over the last few months to a year? Or have you added allocation?
No. We've been reasonably fully allocated. I mean, when people say, oh, you've got 8% cash, say, yeah, but that means we're 92% invested. So we've been reasonably fully invested for the last year, but we did raise money, I have to say, in March and April. Never enough, of course. And we put it all back to work, you know, obviously in retrospect, too soon. So we've been fully invested for the last, you know, 6 or 8 weeks. If we want to buy something now, I have to sell something. That's the gold and silver allocation. Not so the other commodities, and certainly not so the broad markets. If this is a bear market, then there's certainly a reasonable probability that the bear market rally has certainly seen the most of what we're going to see. And again, as I said, the valuations are not low. I always look at valuations. Valuations, as we've discussed before, they don't tell you a high valuation doesn't mean the market's about to crash, just as a low valuation doesn't tell you about that it's going to go up. But this is certainly not a bear market bottom. at 20 times earnings. So we're not buying broadly, but selectively outside of the resources. There are some interesting and attractive buys. I mean, one stock we've been buying is Altria, you know, the old Philip Morris, which is yielding about, MO is a symbol, which is yielding over 8% now. It's almost 9%, in fact. No, it's 8.2, sorry. So that's a nice yield, which is as certain as any yield in this market. You know, the stock fell when the FDA said they were going to ban Juul, you know, that vaping company. Philip Morris, or Altria, I'm sorry, owns about 20% of Juul. So that hurt the stock. We're buying opportunistically when we see things happen. I mean, China and Hong Kong, buying China stocks in Hong Kong right now, we don't buy directly in the China exchanges. I think is there are some good buys there after, you know, the market has gone down significantly on the you know, Pelosi visit. So we even bought some more Alibaba yesterday. We've been trading that stock a little bit, not always successfully. Well, our trades have been successful. Unfortunately, we started buying a long time ago when it was much higher. But, you know, that to me is an attractive buy right now after the big drop.
Well, Adrian, what about in the resource space, just as we wrap up, we get a lot of questions about oil stocks. Have they topped, or is there more life to them? Copper, I know that's something that you do follow. There's some other base metals that have been interesting this year, like nickel, or some of the platinum, palladium, you know, differential looks interesting in platinum's favor of palladium. Do you have any thoughts on just any other resource area that has your attention?
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, oil, you mentioned oil first of all. So, you know, oil has a huge risk right now, and it seems odd to talk about it as a risk, but the risk is the peace breaks out. Because oil obviously got a, I like oil. I like the fundamentals of oil, you know, and we could talk about that for a long time. I like the oil market, and I like it for a multi-year period. But the oil price and the oil stocks had a huge rally at the beginning of March after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And so the big risk now is that if peace breaks out, I think sanctions on oil and gas will be dropped quickly, even if they're not dropped on other things. They'll be dropped on oil and gas because of the West needs Russia's oil and gas. And at that point, the oil stocks would fall. And I think they'd fall fairly meaningfully. I mean, oil would probably drop back to 80, 75, something like that. Now, that will probably be short-lived. Not probably, it would be, in my view, be short-lived. And that will be the time. That will be the time to jump in and buy. But we're not buying now. But you know, broad based, yeah, we like. You know, potash is good, even though that obviously had a good bounce from Russia, the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I wouldn't buy the potash companies again. I would wait until there's peace in the region and stocks drop and then buy it. But if you buy a company, let's say like Altius, which is diversified among many commodities and has, you know, some potash, you know, that's something we're buying now. Thermal coal is actually quite attractive right now. I'm not sure for a multi-year period, but certainly for the next 6-12 months, because the world suddenly realizes the windmills and solar don't cut it. And without Russian oil and gas, Europe is actually turning back to coal, which is really ironic when, you know, the whole green policy got us into this mess. Now they're going to one of the dirtiest coal fuel sources out there, energy sources out there. But anyway, some of the coal companies look good. But broadly speaking, I would say that I'm positive on most commodities. I'm positive on the whole resource complex, but just picking times with one or two, particularly oil and gas, we're holding off on.
All right, Adrian, thank you, as always, for your time. Always interesting to hear what you're investing in. I always read over the notes that you send to all of your clients because it does cover a wide range of stocks. We do talk a lot about resources with you, but you invest in some high dividend paying stocks, some much more well-known stocks, and I find that all very interesting in terms of what you write to clients. Again, Adrian, thank you for your time. Everybody, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. I hope you all enjoyed this weekend show. And hey, I hope this rally keeps going for the markets. But boy, oh boy, we are getting a lot of comments. It is saying this is, again, nothing more than a dead cat bounce, bear market rally. Again, it's also happening in the middle of summer. So we'll take that with a grain of salt. Everybody, thank you again for tuning into this weekend show. We'll be back with you next week. Please, as always, keep in touch with Shad and I through email. We love hearing from all of you, and we'll talk to you all on Monday.